know we keep it really... Are we going over?
We're going, Nate. Welcome.
Oh, I was just going to tell Kevin that we usually keep it pretty informal.
I think he's kind of gathered that by now. I think he knows. We've got this Kevin Carroll. Kevin
show started. It's not... We're on.
So, yeah. So, I'm Nate Voss. You're Donovan Berry. And this is Kevin Carroll. Kevin, how are you doing today?
Elated.
I feel like you're having a really good day. I'm picking up on that vibe from you.
Absolutely. Are you kidding me?
Always a good time here in dressing room 3 in the back of the Colorado
Dressing room 3, back of the house. Who couldn't be happy in the back of the house?
Right.
Back of the house is where you should be.
We have to thank, this is our last interview that we're doing. We have to put a huge thank you out to the house staff for setting all that's up for us, to the lovely and talented and amazing Sue Ann Stein.
Shout out!
Oh my gosh, thanks, guys.
Shout out!
And, the entire experience for us here has just been...
Blanket shout out. It's a blanket shout out.
Great, yes. Everyone.
Blanket shout out.
Love.
Thanks, Steven.
Much love. It's all love. All love.
This has been super.
So, Kevin, you delivered the closing keynote here today, but... before that keynote happened, I know you have a story that you want to share that you just learned about what was going on last night.
And so, this was after the white party we reported on the day five. On the day.
Oh, so you reported from there?
We did.
Yeah,
we did
reported
a show
right from the white party.
So you all might have been the inspiration behind, you know, a bit of those people flocking to this after hours party. You know, it was kind of one of those deals. I'm sure. How did you find out about it?
Yeah. Jeez.
Someone just came up to me and gave me a flyer.
Kind of gave you the flyer. A lot of things were just flowing.
Yes.
And just kind of went with it.
And I looked, I was like, I don't remember seeing this in the program, but all right, that's where
we're going.
And so that's the interesting story behind it. So a student, he lives in St. Louis. He goes by Noah. That's kind of his handle. And he decided, he was so inspired by coming to the conference that he... being a DJ at heart and a music lover at heart, he realized there was going to be this ball, but he said, well, there should always be the after party, so we need to figure out, is there an after party? So he kind of reconnoitered and realized there was no after party.
Because the party only went to like 11:30.
Exactly.
Which is,
right?
It's rough.
Right.
It's like LAME, right? Lame. So he goes, we need to kind of keep kicking this a little bit, and he's a DJ. So he walked around, I guess he was passing by a club and started chatting up the owner and told him what he was thinking about. And the owner said, well, I would allow you to come and bring your people here and you can DJ. He said, okay, I'm going to get the people here. So he sat in his room, 3 a.m., creates a flyer, goes to Kinko's, prints it up, then hands them out to people at the HAL conference. And at the top of the flyer says, this event is not necessarily affiliated with the HAL conference. And
that's
so
huge.
Classic, right? So he wanted to make sure.
It's like not an official, you know what?
But you know, but it's associated.
And it was only like 2 blocks away, so
exactly.
Of course we went.
Of course, right? And so he, you know, is there after the ball moment, right? He's in there, he's already, 8 people are in there, he's panicking a little bit like DJs do, like nobody's gonna come in the house. And then all of a sudden, the wave of people came in, he starts spinning, and then Nate, now I know you can kind of, because Nate was at the party.
And Donovan was there for a little bit, but...
a little bit, because I crashed down about 2.
He said about 2. So that's just saying that he was
nothing.
There beyond 2.
No.
Yeah. So we rolled in, and I was telling one of the new friends that I met here at the HAL conference. So many new friends from the HAL conference. I was telling Aldana, she's like, she didn't go out last night. She's here in Denver. She had to work today. She's like, what was it like last night? I said, well, it went from wild to crazy to bananas.
I left in between the crazy and the bananas.
So you left mid.
You get late
crazy, but not quite bananas.
Oh, wait, no, yeah, no, because it closed down after you left. Because what had happened was, like, look, we've been hitting it hard, okay? It got to a certain point last night, we're like, all right, we've had a good time. Maybe it's time to shut this down, right?
Emma hooked us up at their party.
But yeah, okay, because
so we started
Emma's
about
party.
5. Then Nina really hooked
then
us
we
up
to
at
the white
party.
And then we went to the after party,
so
which at that point kind of makes it the after party.
Oh, well, that's right. That's why you said after party.
That's where that came from. And so then we're like, okay, we're gonna shut this down. We're gonna walk back to the hotel. Not a block away, I catch eight or nine other friends,
including
that are headed there, and they're like, "Hey, you gotta come out. We're not gonna see you for like another 9 months." And I'm like, "All right."
So you went back.
So then I went back, and then we shut it down. And then after that, we had some adventures trying to find things that were still open because we were still going.
So we
weren't done just because it was two. We were like, "Okay, now we need to find things that are still happening." Turns out, not a lot, but we did look.
So this is a shout out to you, Noah. You rocked the house. People are still talking about that subtle little, not quite affiliated, not necessarily affiliated, you know, moment. But there's an opportunity that's going to come your way for Chicago. So you're going to be spinning in the shy. We're going to make that happen. Nate and Donovan are my witness and also the advocates on your behalf.
Yeah, and actually for you listeners out there, sure. SoundCloud.com/DJ Noah, N-O-A-H.
So, and that Kevin, I think is a like, hey, right here and now, great example of what I think you're, if I'm capturing it right, kind of your entire message is. These little, like, catalytic moments that people can seize and that will make a difference in their lives. You were telling us in the keynote about almost a chance meeting. That you had with Anne Willoughby in 2003?
2002.
Anne is incredible.
And Anne is an icon, right? I mean, Anne is a very special woman and everything. But 2002, if Bryn Muth doesn't create that moment, but Bryn was present enough to pay attention to what I had been doing around Gordon, realized that he was very special to me, Gordon McKenzie.
Right.
And Bryn realizes that Anne's present at the conference and creates that moment. So Bryn was a catalyst in such a big way, and Hal was the venue that it happened.
Yeah, and there it is. Now, tell us a little bit about Gordon McKenzie.
Well, Gordon McKenzie, for me, his official title at Hallmark, he worked there for over 30 years, was Creative Paradox. And Gordon basically, which as he always defined it, meant absolutely nothing. It means nothing, which is great because it raises a question, which means then I can tell a story. So he loved the fact that it meant nothing, but it always raised a question, which therefore I got you. So it was this whole deal. But he was this wonderful inspiration within Hallmark who was a contrarian creatively, who went against the norm, fought against the big giant machine of Hallmark, and really created this a wonderful oasis for a lot of creative spirits there. And so they really gained a lot of respect for Gordon and allowed him to behave the way he needed to because they knew it was important to have an area that was about incubating ideas and Gordon could be the lead on that. And I got to meet Gordon when he came to visit Nike. He came to present there.
What were you doing at Nike at the time?
So at the time at Nike, I was working, I met him in 2001. So I was working in design then. I had a myriad of different jobs at Nike when I was there. My official title was Catalyst with a K.
Okay.
But I got to work. I was an innovation director. I led internal communications for a little bit. I worked in design. They gave me my marching orders, the senior leadership, based on where they thought an area of the company needed an injection of inspiration, passion, purpose, and intention. And they would basically give me directives to go and work in that area. And I was, for all intents and purposes, a mercenary of merriment, right? And, and I went in and I kind of got people stirred up and made them recognize how they could do work better, how they could work better together, and how they could manifest ideas into reality. But I was also this connector. I would connect them with other people and do these things. So I was doing that at Nike, and Gordon came to present, and we became friends. And unbeknownst to me, I didn't know about his relationship with Anne.
Right.
It was just about Gordon. And then I started giving his book out at events and talking about Orbit and John Hairball and this gentleman who challenged me to be this catalyst and how I started to behave at Nike even more so like a catalyst, an excitatory agent that speeds up or changes the process. And then let's fast forward to 2002.
Right.
And I'm getting ready to do that closing keynote there. And like I said to you guys, I fibbed a little bit, right? And said that I spoke to audiences of that size before. No problem, Bryn. Absolutely. Well, okay, that'll be great because our closing keynote can't make because I was only going to do a breakout session.
Oh.
And Bryn said, we need a closing keynote. Are you open to that? I'm like, yeah, no problem. How many people? Oh, 3,000. No problem. And I'm thinking to myself, God, I've never never spoke to that many people before in my life. Ah, no problem. I can handle it.
Right. Sure.
Sure. Why not? Sure. Right? What it is, it's just, you know, you just kind of segmenting a room into, you know, groups of 100. Whatever. No big deal. I've spoken to 100 people before. So, Bryn, I don't know why, knowing my story and having gotten to know me a little bit but never seen me speak, she realizes that Anne Willoughby is there. And I've talked about Gordon so much in interviews or whatever with her. And she saw a moment that could happen. And Bryn, I mean, you know, that's why I showed so much love to her on stage, because Bryn is the catalyst for who I am in so many ways today, right? I could be lying in dormant state if there wasn't that moment.
Right, right.
Or I might have spun into a, you know, a lesser kind of a being, if you will, right, of having influence, whatever, because with that moment with Anne, it created this bigger thing now and all the things that we've done together, and that's what we got a chance to talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Eric Hines, we talked to him right after the keynote. He said he's seen you speak 3 times. He said that he was at that first one in 2002. He said you were incredible. He said he was... He said he cried a lot more at that one, though, than this one.
Uh-huh. I don't know.
He said that
I don't know, though, because when you were up there and you were telling Anne Willoughby about how much you appreciate and how much you love her, and then Anne Willoughby gets all, she's all emotional and starts crying. I'm like, oh, my God, there's Anne Willoughby crying up on stage. I can't keep it together. I can't do it. So that was, and I had, and there were people outside. You know, we were talking to our friends Justin Ahrens and Vaughn Glitchka, and they were like, yeah, that's the most amazing thing I've ever
and
seen.
For our listeners who are unfamiliar with you, what is it that Anne pushed you towards? What is it that that chance encounter led into what you've done now, and what is that?
So that chance encounter in 2002 accelerated my intention of being a human catalyst and making a difference in the lives of others around the world using sport and play. And because of Anne, and first inviting me to Kansas City to be a participant in her community, getting to know me even better, then she says, you know, maybe one day we'll do a book together like I did with Gordon. I said, yeah, I got a book in me. I know I do, but I don't know what I want to do. She says, well, you know, you think about it and go from there. I find an editor. We start working on it. I tell Anne I'm working on a book. She said, we want to do the book with you. You just let us know. We continue to do things in the Kansas City community together, forging even deeper connection between the two of us. And I finally say, Anne, I have my book. She said, let's see it. Okay, we're going to put together a proposal. We're going to send it out to these publishers. You can send it. And we get rejected by everybody. They said it was over-designed and too creative.
Oh, right. I mean, you mentioned
that. Yep. Oh. And wonderful responses. Just like Gordon, you're going to have to do it yourself. And so we set out to self-publish and do it exactly the way I want, because like I said to Anne, it was in no way that first book nor any of my books were about revenue. They were always about the message and what I represent. And I didn't in any way want to devalue that. I thought it was too important for it to be a visually compelling story and energetic and playful, just like I am. And I said the book needs to be representative of me. It shouldn't be just black and white in words, and I hope that you're moved by my words. No, I'm going to ensure that you're moved, because I'm going to give some unexpected things, some whimsical things, some fun things, some things that harken you back to your childhood and books you love, like, you know, Where the Wild Things Are and things like that, things that really just tugged at you and you never let them go. And that's what I wanted, and we created this book together, and that became another book, and then it became a third book, and then it became a brand architecture, and then it became my brand language, and then it became my, you know, my look and feel of me. And then I leave Nike in 2004, and I've been gone for nearly 6 years, and now I travel the world and I speak on behalf of sport and play around the world, and I am that human catalyst.
So, and the initial book, and help me out if I'm getting
Rules of the Red Rubber Ball.
Rules of the Red Rubber Ball. Tell me a little bit, Kevin, if you could. When did the idea, or I think the way that you told the story a little bit this afternoon, when did the memory of the red rubber ball as the catalyst in your life really come into focus for you?
Well, I had been sharing that story at presentations since 1990, my backstory, if you will. Mm-hmm. And I got a chance to speak, you know, in front of students and student athletes, because I was an athletic trainer in one of my previous lives.
Sure.
So I was an athletic trainer at summer camps to make extra money. And so with the presenter, they would have guest speakers. If the guest speaker didn't show up, they would go to the athletic training room and say, Kevin, you need to go talk to the campers. They all love you. And I'm like, well. So the first time I ever got asked to do that was 1990, and it was Kathy Rush, who's in the Basketball Hall of Fame. She actually was the first women. She won the first women's basketball championship, Immaculata College. And Kathy Rush has run this amazing camp. The guest speaker doesn't show up. She comes and says, you need to go out there and talk to those girls, 300 girls. And she said, they love you. I said, well, what am I going to talk about? She says, well, tell them your story. That simple.
That's it.
And that was it. And 1990 was the first time I started to put shape to my story and to tell it to people and to talk about how a ball changed my life and saved my life. And that's how the red rubber ball started to evolve and grow. But it was never, I never like had a planned schedule to be speaking. I would just be available for community things in Philadelphia area or whatever. But I didn't know anything about even that there was a public speaking, you know, organization or industry or whatever. I didn't even think of it. I was an athletic trainer, so I was doing my thing and helping athletes stay healthy and perform and do their stuff on whatever playing field. But that was really how I started to kind of put shape to and hone the story.
Right. Well, let's go with, we've been doing, since we've been having guests come one after another, our guest from last week, David Berman, we've been asking the guests to ask the next guest a question, and you don't have to come up with one because we don't know who our next guest
is. Oh, okay.
Because you're the last one we're recording here in house.
You're bringing it home.
David Berman, and he's the author of the book, Do Good.
Do Good Design.
The question he has for you is, what makes, or no, wrong question. I was reading the question to him.
We can ask a couple of these questions. You could ask a whole series of questions.
Yes. We'll see if we can just go back.
How about we start with let's start with Diana's question.
No, we'll start with Kevin. We'll start.
All right.
We'll start and go back.
Now, okay. You two need to get along here.
That's going to be tough.
Yes. Yeah.
What's Kevin Carroll's passion with regard to how to create a better world?
A ball can change the world. And I've witnessed it and I've seen it. And that's my passion and my intention is to advance the Sport for Social Change movement and how it's being activated around the world. I am heavily involved with that. And I'm the unofficial orator on behalf of that movement. And I've been invited to speak at the United Nations, to sharing a stage with Archbishop Desmond Tutu just last year. It was actually our third time being together. And he gave me a little nickname. He calls me the little handsome man. So he says, "There goes that little handsome man again." But I'm completely invested in that and trying to find a way to advance that. But I truly believe a ball can change the world, and I've seen what's going on with some of these human catalysts and communities all over the world that are using sport to make a difference. Be it gender issues, be it health issues, be it literacy issues, social inclusion, just phenomenal what's going on. So that's what I'm invested in on a daily basis.
And then tell us a little bit about some of these balls. You kind of went out and would trade off. Yes. You know, here's a new ball that you can use, and we're collecting these handmade balls.
Oh, these beautiful artifacts. I mean, the ball collection, I call it my red rubber ball collection, and it's phenomenal to see first the necessity of play and what we're willing to do for play, but even more so how clever and creative we can be around our play to ensure that we can do it. And so the ball collection is just representative from all over the world of what we will do for play. We will make a ball out of anything, whatever is available, be it trash, be it banana fibers from a tree. The one from Uganda, just phenomenal. I mean, it's so ingenious. They have an abundance of these banana banana trees. Mm-hmm. They peel the fibers down and dry them out in the hot sun for 2 days, and then they have this amazing, intricate way of bonding them together, and they make a ball. And then what's so wonderful is you always know when the game is over because the ball disintegrates. It's gone.
Because you gotta stop playing because there's no ball.
There's no ball. You gotta make another one. Yeah. And if you waterproof it, you just put it in a plastic bag and tie it up.
What is the reaction you get when you take and trade it for,
can you imagine,
like a new one?
Imagine, okay, first, you know, a new ball is a lot of money.
Right.
Even though we look at it as it's something very, you know, accessible and it's no big deal, right?
Or you go to any school and there's just a bucket.
Yeah, right? It's a, they're, I love this, it's a SAT word, veritable plethora, right? So of them, right? So one of the things that's interesting is a new ball would, let's say it costs $10. $10 in a lot of developing countries It's a lot of money. It's someone's, you know, income for months, maybe.
Yeah.
So a new ball is gold. So I start bringing these around and then giving them to my friends. And the stories I get back, you won't believe what happened when I just started. I did exactly what you said, Kevin. I stood outside and I just started bouncing the ball. And people started coming towards me, especially children. They said, what are you going to do with that? Well, I'm going to play. Well, can we play? Yes. Do you think you might leave that ball here when you go? Well, I might. Oh, okay. And instantly, they have a community. They're playing. There's conversation. Maybe they don't even speak the same language, but they speak ball. Right? And that's a universal language. Yes. Play is a universal language. Doesn't matter where you go in the world. Right? We all have a play history. Right?
Right.
We all love music. Those are two very universal things, play and music. And that's what I've discovered. So that's where I started this idea of exchanging. And now people send them to me without the exchange, or I do play it forward moments where I actually will donate a whole bag to someone and say, tell me what you do with these. Take them somewhere and impact someone's life or community with these and tell the story back. So I have one actually happening in Melbourne, Australia right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm waiting to hear the story back. But we've done ball drops around the world in Uganda, the outback of Australia. We did it in India. I mean, we're doing all kinds of crazy things around this, but I know a ball can change the world. I've seen it. I hear it. I hear the stories, and I've witnessed.
Yeah, and one of the other thing David Berman's doing is he's having people sign up, and his one of the things he wants to do to make the world better is he's like, there's 2 million designers. If we can get them all to do 4 hours of their week, even if it's paid work for a company that does good, or some cause that does good, will be better off. And I'm guessing you've probably pretty much taken that pledge, I'm sure.
Unbeknownst to me, but I have. David, I'm down. So you don't have to worry about it. I'm there, and I've done it. And, you know, it's so funny that saying, you know, doing well by doing good, right? And
right.
So your business can do well by you doing good works.
Yeah, and that was...
And it's true, right?
I think that was one of his key messages was a couple years back, and he just decided, you know what? I'm changing my business just a little bit right now. I'm only going to do work for clients that do good. If they don't meet that criteria, that's it.
He sold his half the business to his business partner.
Wow.
Yeah. Left the studio.
Wow.
Should we do Diana's question now?
So Diana Valentine, who helps coach creatives and stuff, and part of the reason is she tries to get down to why you would coach. So her question is, what makes you feel super giddy?
Aside from, and let me just pause it, aside from, I don't know, breathing.
Because breathing,
you're
right.
Like the most active person that I've encountered. this has been the first show we've done. This is our 12th show that we've done since we've been here at Howe. And this has been the first one where I really truly feel like, man, I really wish we had a video. Just because there's so much to the way that you're telling the story.
I think the animation's coming across.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant. No, what makes me super giddy?
Not just giddy, right?
That's like the after party, right?
Yeah,
that's beyond the party.
Mm-hmm. What's your after party?
Well, okay, it's a combination. If I have access to, well, three things. If I have access to listening to some cello music, while I have my cello out, because I have two cellos.
How long have you played cello?
I played since I was in fourth grade. I stopped for a long period because I didn't have the money to buy one. I played from fourth grade to 10th grade, played summer orchestra, orchestra in school. I actually hid my cello when I was doing football in the shower, the one place that nobody would ever use in junior high, right? It's the shower, right? So it was a perfect safe place to hide it because I didn't want to get teased. My football coach finds it, holds it up by the neck and comes in. Whose big fiddle is this? And everybody's cowering, right? Because we're scared to death of him, right? And he's like, if I don't find out who left this in the shower, all of you are running till I get tired and I won't be running. So everybody's sitting there like... And we're seventh graders, right?
Yeah,
so we're just scared to death, right? So I stand up. That's mine, Coach Beethoven. Get over here. I said, well, actually, Coach Beethoven didn't play cello.
Now you're going to correct me.
Get in my office. He comes in, slams his door, and he says, can you really play that Beethoven? Can you really play that big fiddle on my case? Just play it for me right now. You play that big fiddle for me right now. So I pull my chair out. I start playing for him. He's closing his eyes and rocking. And just, now you listen to me, Beethoven, right now. You listen to me good. You're going to have to play for me every single day before you're allowed out on that field. If you don't play for me, you won't be playing. Do you understand me? Yes, sir. Now get out of my office. So that gentleman was an encourager for me as relates to my cello and my love of classical music. So I stopped in 10th grade. I made a promise that I would play again. I started up again 9 years ago. I have a cello teacher. I have two cellos at home. And so the cello is absolutely important. So you have classical music, cello, and then throw in some chocolate, and I'm super giddy.
Done.
Oh, call it over. But it has to be very special chocolate. You know, there's those all those gourmet chocolates now. Mm-hmm. So I'm down with all the gourmet, like crazy. Like throw some cocoa in there and a little bit of cayenne pepper. You know, the, those ones. And they got the art on them and stuff. Yeah, yeah. So that's the kind of chocolates I like.
I'm a Hershey's guy.
I can do that.
Yeah.
But that's that, only on a giddy level.
Okay. Yeah.
You ask super giddy.
Okay.
So I differentiated that.
We were in KC, and I know you live in Portland right now.
Yes.
I picked up on that, but apparently
lots of points.
The Kansas City area. Donovan, do you remember the name of that chocolate shop?
I know what you're talking about.
Do you know the one I'm talking
about? I've had some from there, and Willoughby has given those to me.
Yeah.
They're beautiful. They're little
works of art.
Yes, they're gorgeous.
Flavor range is amazing.
But let me just tell you, they taste even better.
Yeah, we'll look those up.
Yes.
And put that on our post.
I'm the opposite. I go super giddy on Hershey's because it reminds me of going and visiting my grandpa at the post office when I was probably, you know, 4.
Have you ever been to Hershey Park?
He would keep a bag under the counter and then give them to us. Give them to the kids.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Have you been to Hershey Park?
No. Where's it?
Oh, my. In Hershey, Pennsylvania.
What?
Well, that
it's
makes
a place.
Sense.
That's
it's
really
a place. It's not just the bar. It's an actual place.
I've never been to Pennsylvania. Oh, wait. I've been to Pittsburgh.
Oh, fail.
Oh. Are you saying Pittsburgh is not Pennsylvania? You're going to get some haters out there. You better be careful.
Pittsburgh is Steeler country. It's its own state.
Yeah. Good save.
Good save on that. That was a good save. Pound that one. Because, yeah, that was you were getting ready to get some hate mail.
Yeah.
Right. Well, hey, let's
do one last question.
We got one last question for Kevin.
So is my super giddy clear?
Super giddy is
please,
clear.
Yes.
Three things.
That chocolate and classical
music.
You.
Classical music, cello, and the Kansas City chocolate. Nice. We'll just throw it there. Boom, yes. Done.
Done.
Yeah, we'll ask the question that Debbie Millman had for Diana.
Yeah, go for it.
All right, what's your favorite Scrabble word?
Oh my gosh, wait. We played Scrabble. We had this snowstorm, and we were playing Scrabble like every night. And I used a word, and my stepdaughter, she thought it was just ridiculous. Now I have to try to remember, oh my gosh, what was that word? Because she was like, that's not even a word. I don't even believe that. And she went, no, look it up. And so she looks it up. Oh, cacophony.
Cacophony.
Oh, very nice.
Cacophony.
That's... I don't know what that word means. I'm not going to lie.
It is a loud, raucous noise.
Yes, okay.
What I am the embodiment of.
I think there was a Batman Cacophony comic book I bought, and that's... Now I had to look up the word, because I'm like, why would they call it this?
Okay.
I learned that word in fifth grade. My fifth grade teacher, Miss Rock. Miss Rock would come in, you know, like she'd walk out to go to the restroom or whatever and leave us in there, fifth graders, right? We'd all get all crazy and everything. She'd come in and the first thing she said, the cacophony in this room is outrageous. Oh. And we would sit there like, what does that mean, right? We're all sitting there like dumbfounded by the word. And then she could tell like we were just like really just puzzled. Look it up.
That, yeah.
And I looked it up. And I said, I love that word. And so any chance I get to use cacophony, oh man,
especially
come on, right?
Scrabble
and Scrabble?
That's an advanced
Come on, right, right? Right. That's going to definitely make people, is that really a word?
Right. I find that, we found that when Diana asked that question, part of the word that you want to use in Scrabble is to make them look it up. And lots of vowels, and cacophony sounds like it's got a lot of vowels.
Absolutely. We got a few in there. C-A-C-O-P-H-O-N-Y. Cacophony.
Yeah, you put that over a triple word score, you're done.
Bam!
You're done.
Bam, right?
Game over.
Shut it down.
Well, this has been a pleasure. It's been a pleasure talking to you. Where can people go to find more and to get your books?
Oh, if you just Google whatever, Bing, whatever your search engine of choice is, Kevin Carroll, Catalyst with a K.com. Kevin Carroll, Catalyst with a K, K-A-T-A-L-Y-S-T. Use that in your Scrabble.com.
KevinCarrollCatalyst.com.
There you go. There you go. There you go. I wanted to make sure. I'm all into the alliteration, right? You know, that's my whole deal, right? It's throwing in that. That's the whole thing. So that's where you find it there, and you'll see all my craziness going on there. Also, on Twitter, you can find me at KC Catalyst with a K. You find me there on Twitter, and I'm on Facebook. Wherever you might think that people might be dwelling and I can activate them for the movement, that's where I am.
All right. Well, Kevin, this has been an absolute pleasure.
It's all love for Hal.
And you can find more of us at 36point.com.
Yeah,
check
this
it out. We'll
and
be back
the
in a
other
couple weeks.
Crazy 11 other shows that we just did at How Denver 2010, and we may be doing this again next year, so we will have more information on that when it becomes available.
You
got it. Gotta love a teaser.
Yeah,
gotta love a teaser.
Yeah, come back for more. And, so Kevin, thanks so much for being on
my
the show
pleasure.
Taking
Thank
time
you so
out of the week with us. Good luck in all you do. Make sure you keep doing it. And I guess we'll do the same. Donovan, why don't you take us out?
We're out.